Want a recipe for success? Step one, visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. Step two, click on my link to browse OCD Training School's amazing course catalog. Step three, enroll. And step four, enjoy learning. With no added cost to you, you can support the OCD family community while grabbing some continuing education or learning how to bridge yourself to self-help strategies for OCD. Again, that's OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. And use my special link to sign up today.
Hey, fam. Welcome back to the OCD Family Podcast, because we have a very special guest, Anila Idnani, the co-founder and president of Habit Aware, as well as TEDx speaker, award-winning leader, author, entrepreneur extraordinaire that, you know, just started a nonprofit in her spare time over the last few years, and also a wife, a mother, a friend. And she's here to talk with us about her experience of trichotillomania, or hair pulling disorder, and how her learning about her own body-focused repetitive behavior, or BFRB, has led to inventing and proliferating hope for you, for me, for our loved ones. So get ready, fam, because I can't wait for you to hear more.
I'm Nicole Morris, licensed marriage and family therapist and mental health correspondent. And let me be the first to say, welcome to the family, the OCD family, that is. I am here to create a community of support for family members, spouses, partners, parents, adult children, as there may be adult words, and chosen family of OCD sufferers and their community. I've had over 22 years of experience in the mental health field, but please note that this information does not qualify or substitute as a diagnostic evaluation, therapy, or treatment, and it is presented on an as-is basis. Please follow up with a qualified mental health provider in your area regarding concerns for yourself or loved ones. Thank you for joining us today. Now, let's get started.
All right. So I have to say, I'm getting ready to go do an evening full of face painting for my children because it's an end of the year fundraiser. And this is our last full week of school. It's a busy week. There's also neighborhood garage sales going on. I have family visiting in town. It has been wild, but that's okay, because it is worth taking the time for our special guest, Anila Idnani. Anila, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is the co-founder and president of Habit Aware. And you might be going, Nicole, what is Habit Aware? Oh, you're in for a treat, because we're going to be talking about all of that and more. But more broadly, we're going to be talking about BFRBs. Now, what are BFRBs? We've talked about it here on the podcast, but if you're new to this OCD-related disorder, let's just pause here, take a brief moment, and share with the class. BFRBs is an umbrella term of sorts that help group together different mental health conditions characterized by repetitive, self-grooming actions or behaviors that can cause physical damage and distress. These behaviors often involve pulling, biting, picking, or scraping at one's own skin, hair, or nails. And so that can include trichotillomania, otherwise known as hair pulling disorder. And we're going to be talking about that one a bit more today, because Anila is courageously sharing her lived experience with us. But again, this episode is relevant and helpful for anybody with lived experience or a loved one with lived experience of a BFRB, or even if you are a friend or community advocate or mental health professional and you're like, I want to learn more. This is for you. And BFRBs are vast and creative, just like our brains. So it could include cheek chewing. It could include lip licking or nose picking or cheek biting, finger sucking or teeth grinding. And I'll say, if you suspect you or your loved one has a BFRB and you don't hear the exact description of it, then that just means you didn't hear the exact description of it. Because again, BFRBs are inclusive of so much more. So we'll refer to it most commonly as a BFRB because, you know, body-focused repetitive behavior gets to be a mouthful. So let me tell you just a little bit more about Anila, and then we're going to dive right in because we got lots of ground to cover and awareness to create. So Anila is here and she's going to be talking about her experience with hair pulling disorder, as well as her journey through childhood, through adulthood, before she realized and as she gained some level of knowledge about trichotillomania. But also we're going to learn about how incredible she is, because she went on to not only face the pain and the distress and the disorder and get support and treatment, She went on to invent a smart bracelet that can help a wide variety of people suffering with PFRBs using hand movement detection and real-time awareness to bring the unknown into the known. Habit Aware has been named in Time magazine as one of the best inventions, and Fast Company has recognized them as a world-changing idea. And as if that wasn't enough, Anila has a memoir in the works coming out next year through New Harbinger Publications and founded a nonprofit called BFRB Changemakers to help support particularly the lived experience BFRB community. So the woman is impressive and her story is such an incredible gift. So let's dive in. Well, welcome back to the OCD Family Podcast. And today, as I mentioned, family, I'm so excited because we have a powerhouse guest who has done so much incredible work, not only in her own life, but for the body-focused repetitive behavior community. And that is our guest, Anila Idnani. Welcome. Thanks for coming and hanging out with the fam.
Gosh, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here, and your fam is my fam, so I'm excited to get to know everyone here and for everyone to get to know my journey and just know that I'm accessible. I'd love to talk to you if anything resonates that we talk about today.
Yes, Anila, my fam is your fam is my fam. I love it. And you're right, because we many times over have talked about BFRBs here on the show. That's, again, an acronym for body-focused repetitive behaviors. But we have such a powerful story in your story, and not only what it's looked like for your own life, but the way that you have paid it forward to open up resources and hope for the community at large. And so a real general overview, I will just say, family, is that BFRBs can manifest in many different ways. And today we're going to be talking about more specifically trichotillomania, but also as we talk about the hope that's offered here, this applies for all BFRBs. And I just want you to know, like, if you think, well, I did this thing, but it doesn't look exactly like Anila's story, that doesn't mean your story isn't valid. And so I am so excited to have this conversation. And for starters, Anila, I would love to just hear about your journey into understanding that you were experiencing a body-focused repetitive behavior.
Yeah, and that understanding took a decade. It took a really long time. You know, even with OCD, they say, you know, someone doesn't get a diagnosis for like 10, 15 years on average. Like, I didn't know what I was doing to myself. And that's sort of the language I used to use. Like, I was a kid. I was 11, 12 years old. I had moved to a new town where I didn't feel like I belonged. I felt othered. I felt kind of, you know, invisible, pushed away in a sense. So I felt very uncomfortable there. And then in high school, my freshman year of high school, all through my high school journey, my father was sick with cancer, passed away when I was a junior in high school. And during those 3 or 4 years, we were so focused on his physical health. Mm-hmm. No one stopped to think about my mom, my sister, myself. I mean, even my dad's mental health. Like, how are you doing in this process, right?
Right.
And so I took to pulling out my hair. I actually started probably around 10, 11, 12. I don't remember exactly when. It's like very much a blur. But I started pulling out my pubic hairs. Mm-hmm. So around puberty, you know, hormonal change. And I would pull out my pubic hairs because it felt good. and that was okay. Like, nobody knew. It wasn't like a thing where I was locking myself in a bathroom. Like, it didn't get to mental health condition until a little bit later. And then around that time, like after starting pulling, I was in science class and the science teacher like pulled in the science cart with the TV and we watched this video about microscopic mites in our eyebrows and eyelashes. Mm-hmm. And that was like, oh, whoa, what? You know, I started kind of looking at those areas a little bit more, and I'm Indian, so I'm a little more, my eyebrows are a little more bushy. I have a little bit more, you know, hair, dark hair, arms, legs, etc. So I was very aware of hair. in that sense. And so then I started tweezing my eyebrows, and then it went to my eyelashes, and then it just sort of like snowballed into, I can't control this thing. I don't know when it's happening, and I can't let anyone know because I don't want anyone to think I'm more weird than I already am. So I hit it with a black eye pencil. That was my partner in crime for decades. So that's kind of where it started. And I didn't want anyone to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask Anila, and again, to the extent that you feel comfortable, and I want to also extend my sympathy. It's never easy to lose a loved one. It's never easy to lose a parent, particularly in childhood during such formative years. And I know that often, you know, I've had some dear friends and family members that have had cancer themselves. And often there is almost this, some people would describe it as toxic positivity of let's be positive. So-and-so is going to pull through. They're going to fight the cancer. They're going to do fine. And so sometimes not only is there not a focus on the mental health, but there's also like, don't get upset. Don't think that you're going to lose this for a second. There can be almost this pressure to feel like everything's going to be fine. And I don't know if you experienced that very much in your family, but I wonder if, again, you describing the initial start of your hair pulling and how that could feel good, I would imagine there was a real craving for some positive emotions during that time.
Yeah, yeah. And for myself personally, I actually don't believe in toxic positivity. I don't think positivity can be toxic by nature. It just doesn't, the word itself, like, and the act of it, just, it can't. It just can't to me. I know that there's that term toxic positivity. I actually remember on the fridge, I had written hope for the best, prepare for the worst. Mm-hmm. You know, with my mom, we were talking and my aunt was, and when I say aunt, she's not my actual aunt, where in Indian culture, anyone that's close is an aunt. So my aunt was visiting from Albany. She's my mom's like school buddy from dental school and was staying with us because we had a lot of support around us. And she went and she ripped off the prepare for the worst part of the thing. And so one might see that as toxic positivity, but I actually see it now as positivity, as this understanding. And I do a lot of visualization, manifestation work now, kind of have come to this understanding of, you know, even in cognitive behavioral therapy, we talk about the CBT triangle, right? That your thoughts impact your feelings, impact your actions, and it's a triangle. To me, my understanding is really it's a line. Your thoughts need to match your feelings, which impact your actions. So we can't think hope for the best, but then our actions be preparing for the worst because the energy doesn't jive, right? And so this is a little woo-woo and a little more like universe talk. But
I like it.
But to me, you have to stay positive because that energy you're putting out to the universe. And so if your mind is, I'm thinking he's going to pull through, but I'm preparing for the funeral. Yeah. Like that doesn't work, you know?
Yeah.
And the feelings in the mix of all of that, it doesn't work. And so faith is part of that. And so for me, now, today, yeah, when I was a kid and through my 20s, I was a mess and couldn't find a place for positivity in my life. I was going through massive depressive episodes throughout much of my life because I hadn't fully grieved. And, you know, and I kind of said it very casually in the beginning, and I lost him to cancer. I said it so casually because I've so fully processed it now. Mm-hmm. And I don't actually believe that I've lost him. He's here with me. Happy to wear the company that I've started for BFRBs would not be here if not for that journey.
I love that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So all that to say, hope for the best.
Yes, yes. I love that. I appreciate you expanding on that. And I think so many people listening are going to be able to relate to that as well. Another thing I was thinking about too is, it's so important to remember too, culturally, what we put out there matters. And there are so many different, really beautiful parts of a myriad of different cultures too, that are going to have that tradition to be able to speak life into truth. And so I really appreciate you sharing that piece as well. And so you had lost your dad, and obviously when it starts, and I really, really appreciate too you talking about pulling the pubic hair, because I think it's so common. And so many people are like, oh, I can't talk about that. Yes, you can.
No one talks about it.
Yeah, nobody talks about it. And so I appreciate that. But also your pubic hair then is in a very private place, right? And so it's an easy enough to conceal space where the average person is not going to be able to see or be able to detect anything. And you also talked about really as it manifested more, how you didn't want to come off as weird. You didn't want to be seen as othered. And it just reminded me, because so many people in life, period, not just with BFRBs, but so many people when dealing with their BFRB feel very shackled to that shame, right? Yeah. And so I would love to hear more about how that impacted you through some of those formative years, even into adulthood. Because again, like you said, I didn't know exactly what this was for so long. And we will get there, family, in terms of when she was able to really discern, like, this is what's happening for me. But I would love for you to, again, to the extent that you're comfortable, share about what that relationship with shame was like for you.
Yeah. I mean, shame is what fueled probably the first 30 years of my life, you know, because of this, because of growing up in a town where I was a different race. I didn't have money in a quite wealthy neighborhood. Like, there were so many reasons I didn't have the clothes, you know, like, I was already being questioned and shamed and forced to acknowledge my differences, right? So that creates a lot of shame. I'm wrong. I don't have the right clothes. I don't have this. I don't have that. I'm wrong. And then, oh, I'm pulling out my hair. And that perception of, because it's my hands, it's my fault, is what stuck with me. And I think what sits with a lot of people with BFRBs, you can see it happening, right? Like, a parent from across the room can see their child pulling and think, they're doing it again, right? But they don't know they're doing it. Like, their hands are just going up there. Their hands are just, like, it just looks like they know. But it's so subconscious. It's so rooted in that reptile brain that it's so automatic, autopilot. But even us with this condition, we don't acknowledge that. We don't understand that yet. And so it's our burden to bear. It's my burden to bear. It's my fault. Those are the things I told myself because I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Hiding was the way to, you know, shame means hiding.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also that complexity of, there are what we describe in the mental health field as egocentric experiences, meaning, family, that it can feel good. It can feel beneficial. It can feel soothing. BFRBs in and of themselves were really born out of this self-grooming behavior that is very natural to, I like how you mentioned the reptilian brain, because we can see across animals, not just in humans, but just across so many different species, this pattern of behavior, right? And so some folks listening might go, well, I've pulled out an eyelash before. Does that mean that I have a BFRB? Not necessarily. In fact, if it was one eyelash, we're probably safely in the, this is not a habit that you have felt really stuck in and isolated in. But it's actually a very natural pattern of behavior, these different self-grooming behaviors across species. And so it's so important for people to understand, because it gets so complicated when you're like, this feels good, but also this is hurting me. This is making me feel like I can't go out without that black eyeliner. And one of the things I know, and I'm going to post your TED Talk over on this episode's blog, which, for any newer family joining, just so you know, all the amazing things, resources, organizations that Anila has helped to build are all going to be linked on this episode's blog. But she talks in a TED Talk about, even to the extent of worrying about trying out, say, for the basketball team. I think it was basketball, right, Anila?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And can you talk a little bit more about how your BFRB started guiding and directing your choices or avoidance in certain behaviors because of the hair pulling?
Yeah. Yeah. So that shame, right? It becomes the decision maker. I love how you say avoidance. That's a great way of saying it, right? So one of the things was basketball. I love basketball as a kid. I still love it. Now I get to play it with my 11-year-old. But back then, even the coach, you know, the gym teacher who was the basketball coach would see me in the hallway and be like, when are you trying out? And I went to tryouts. And after tryouts, everyone was in the locker room, they showering, this and that. And I went like this and wiped my brow and the black came off onto my hand. And that was it. I was like, I can't do this because then people will know. And I even remember as a little bit younger, my dad was dropping me off to a pool party. But I had the same fear of one, people are going to see my hairy legs. People are going to see my hairy arms. People are going to see, you know, and then people are going to see my no eyebrows.
Yeah.
And so we literally pulled into the driveway of this house and I shot down into the back of the car. And I was like, I don't want to go. I had a chest pain. It was obviously anxiety, but I didn't know I had anxiety then.
Right.
And I made him take me home. Because all of a sudden in that moment, all the what ifs came to a head. And I was like, no, can't do this. Right. And so that's what happens in our lives is we don't go for the job because the job description says no hats. You know, we don't go for the things that we know we are going to enjoy and we deserve because we're scared of what other people think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not a healthy way to live.
Yeah.
And I want to just go back to what you were talking about, animals and the grooming gene. And rightfully so, right? You look at monkeys picking the nits out of the little baby's hairs and stuff. Yep. And it's also this psychology and science of touch and skin. And Stacey Nickell is a licensed clinical social worker who does a lot of work around the psychology of skin. She would be an amazing person to talk to. We've done CE trainings with her.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that science of touch and how skin is almost like an emotion organ in a sense. It's speaking to us.
Yeah.
And these behaviors are self-regulation. The reason I took to hair pulling was because I didn't have healthier strategies as a child. I pulled out those few eyebrows after the mites in my eyebrows class and it felt good. And that is the biggest problem with this thing is it feels good in the moment, but it feels so terrible 20 seconds later. Yet our brain is but it feels good. But it feels good. But it feels good. So we're going to keep doing it. We're going to keep doing it. We're going to keep doing it. And it's a lie that our brain tells us.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's just a reality that self-regulation gets to a point of being kind of this self-medicating experience where it's even if I know, and again, this would require some of that awareness, and sometimes there can be awareness, sometimes not, but even if I know, this isn't what I want to do, I don't want to pick, I don't want to pull, I don't want to bite, I don't want to chew, then that's where extra shame comes in, because then you're but I need this relief, this soothing, this regulation, which in and of itself, not a bad thing to want regulation. Yeah. But then you also have then that extra shame when you're like, what? I did. I pulled. I picked. I did something. And that distress then leads to what, family? Can you imagine? A need for more self-regulation because you're feeling distressed, right? But there are so many different sensory experiences. And even if you have a beautiful array of coping skills, discovering this sensation or this solve or this fix. You know, some of the BFRB models will talk about the SCAMP and the different elements that go into why the picking or pulling might be satisfying that urge, right? The problem is it also changes. So you might have a great coping skill of knitting and it keeps your hands busy and all that stuff. And that's still sometimes just not going to replace the urge or the sensation of pulling or engaging in any given BFRB. And so I think that's a really good point, too.
Yeah, 100%. It's not about one new strategy. It's about that toolkit of strategies. And it's about learning. It's really about mind-body connection. It's about learning what you need in the moment, because it could be I need to go to sleep. It could be I need to go knit. It could be I need water. It could be I need to go to the bathroom. You have to take that moment to pause and reset and ask yourself, what do I need? This behavior is doing two things. It is self-regulating you. It's getting you back to your baseline. But it can also be that signal that you need something else to get you back to baseline. And so you can use that one hair pull, which is what I now do, to say, oh, what do I need? And go take yourself in that healthy way. And that's the work that we try to do with our community that we serve.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, one of the things we will say, whether we're talking about OCD or any of the OCD related disorders, whether we're talking about BFRBs, is what's the function, right? Because there's so many different functions that it can serve. And so in a certain way, I don't know how you feel about this, Anila, but I feel like sometimes when people are able to engage in this specific treatment and be able to feel an understanding and an empowered way of communicating with their body or understanding the way their body is communicating, though I would never wish the BFRB on anyone, it's a pretty special way to be able to really connect and understand yourself. And I think that can be very, very loving and very powerful when we start to really understand how the body is speaking to us, how our brain is speaking to us. Because so many, if we look at like just general population, so many people are just like hanging on and have no clue what their body is trying to say to them, but they are trying to self-regulate through it.
Yeah. 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 It is touch. It is when I play with my eyebrows, it feels good. I'll still do that. I even remember my dad would lean back when he was at his computer and, or maybe it was word processor back then, and he would like rub his head, you know, like it just feels good. It's, you think about a mother and a baby, right? How do they connect? That skin to skin, that contact is what we all crave. And so it feels good, it just goes awry. And so how do we find things that feel just as good to take care of ourselves?
Yeah, yeah. So that we can flip the script on shame and realize, you know what? There's no shame in my body, in me needing this. And the way that I've been getting this is also really distressing to me. And so I want to feel empowered to find other ways to respond to the signals, to respond to the needs, but then you can, again, be empowered versus feeling shamed about it. And so as you continued through childhood and adolescence, which is such an awkward, oh my gosh, it's such an awkward phase anyway, where we're all trying to kind of, we're naturally, developmentally looking for that sense of identity and understanding oneself. But into adulthood, I would love for you to talk about how this ultimately led to you understanding that what you're dealing with is called a BFRB.
Yeah.
What you're dealing with has a name and you're not alone in that.
Yeah, yeah. 100%. Teenage years is all about trying to figure out who you are. The problem with that is that everyone is busy telling you who you are.
Yeah.
And it gets complicated. And then in my 20s, college, you know, I was pulling, nobody would tell me anything, nobody would notice anything, nobody would say anything, but I was still doing it. I would go into the bathroom with my tweezers, pull, pull, pull. I would pull late at night in bed, just the same rituals. And then it was really like after college and starting to work and stuff, I was an accountant doing audits and it was very stressful. And around that time, I had eye surgery. So I used to wear glasses and I got the LASIK eye surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And at the follow-up appointment, the optician, ophthalmologist, you know, was looking at my eyes and was like, where are your eyelashes? And that was the first time anyone ever questioned it.
Wow.
And anyone ever noticed, or maybe not noticed, anyone that, I'm sure people noticed, they just never said anything. That was the first time that anyone ever said anything. And then I also had a lot of rosacea at that time on my skin. And he was like, oh, it's probably your, you know, pimple medication. And he answered it for me. And I was like, okay, I'm not taking pimple medication, but thanks for letting me know I have rosacea. And maybe I'll go look into that now. But also thanks for not pushing that, because I was like, I don't actually, that was the first time. And then I went back to my work office and I still remember looking out at this big blue sky in New York City. Everyone else was at lunch because I had done a lunch appointment, mm-hmm. came back to my desk and I typed in to probably what was Yahoo at the time, maybe Google, why do I pull out my hair? And that was the moment that I found out the word trichotillomania. And that was the moment that I found out it was a mental health condition. And that was the moment that I was like, can't handle that, right? And I didn't have that thought process, but I wasn't aware of that thought process. But that feeling is
no
what
way.
Then
yeah.
pushed me even further down to hide, right? Yeah. When I was growing up in the 90s, it wasn't mental health the way we talk about it today. It was mental illness. It was what you see in the media on, you know, Law and Order was straitjackets and padded rooms.
Psycho.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, and like people in their white pajamas lining up to get their little white pills.
Yeah.
Like that was what we knew as mental illness. So the moment I read that, I was like, no, that cannot be. And I refused to kind of acknowledge it, kept pulling, kept hiding. It probably even made it worse, increased my anxiety, depression, along with a lot of other stuff going on around that time. And I just kept hiding.
Yeah, you know, I've had LASIK before as well, and I can imagine, because that would be very vulnerable, particularly if it's like so much focus right there around the eyes. And you're right, the stigma around mental health, I feel like even the stigma around LASIK at that time, because people are like, you're gonna go permanently blind. Or maybe that was, it was a new enough procedure that like my echo chamber was, you know,
yep,
just calling it like they were calling it. But yeah, I mean, to be in that position and then to consider how mental health did have that extreme stigma. And, you know, I remember even when I was in grad school, that still the medical model and the mental health model overlapping was a little controversial.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, why? Right? Because our brains contribute to a lot in both. Right? And it was like, yes, and we're supposed to keep that separate. But also, and I don't know, again, you talked about how people weren't checking in on your mental health through your dad's cancer journey and everything. But I know, like, you know, over here, I grew up in the Bible Belt, and it was very much seen as you need to get right with God. If you're distressed, that's your fault. And so people there was a lot of shame about saying mental health, because it must mean you've done something to bring this upon yourself. And I'm not saying everybody believes that. So folks with different religious backgrounds are hearing that. I'm not shaming. It's just, it speaks to the stigma. And I wonder about how even your family's like view on mental health, were they like, yeah, that is totally bizarre, wrong. We can't have these mental health issues. Or did you guys even really have a language? A lot of people didn't.
I don't fault my parents for not checking in on my mental health, because we didn't have language for it. We didn't have awareness of it. We didn't have understanding of it. And I think I can see now, I can self-diagnose my anxiety as a child now. Like now, right, after reading plenty of articles about it and research papers, I'm like, oh my God. And now I know, like, that sizzle in my body is anxiety. And I know now how to turn the boiling water off, if you will.
Yeah.
So I don't fault them for it. We were just so focused on the physical health, you know, that, you know, to your point before of physical health and mental health, there was like a wall between them. When now we understand they're so intertwined to the point where you can literally psych yourself into getting physically sick, you know?
Right.
Like, so we just didn't have it. And we also didn't, my religious background is pretty fuzzy, because I went to vacation Bible school, but then I also went to Sikh Gurdwara. And then I also went to my own Sindhi temples and Hindu temples. And my mom growing up in India was at a Christian boarding school. So I think from there, you know, we just like,
yeah,
God is God to us, kind of. Like, I believe in a God. I believe in a universal power. But to me, like, I will pray to Jesus and I will pray to Ganesh. Like, you can fault me for it, but I believe that everyone's journey, spiritual journey, should be their own. And so for us, we didn't really have sort of that, like, oh, you got to pray it out of you kind of mentality. But I think there was that sense of, if we meditate, and I didn't do that, but my dad and my uncle were big into it. If we, you know, go to these different places for spiritual connection, that will help us, right? That does good for us. And so it was just part of the practice, but that was sort of the only, I would say, self-regulating thing that I was taught, right? And I wasn't really taught deep breathing or meditation or even like exercise. Like I was pretty sedentary, watching TV all the time type of child. My parents both worked a lot. And so I missed that as well.
Yeah. And you know what, fam? She said you can fault her for it, but I'm going to be like, no, you can't. We're allowed to believe what we believe, and there's no shame in that. So don't you come after her for that. Or you deal with her sister of another mystery. But yeah, it's interesting because the more that I've learned about BFRBs, sometimes we in life, period, are looking for a win, an answer to solve. And sometimes there can be this just satisfying kind of feature within BFRBs of like, okay, this felt a little rough and now it's smooth. That solves something for me. And so you can see how sometimes different practices can fit in and be something that would be a useful tool for another person with a BFRB. It might do absolutely nothing because, again, we have to think about how is that BFRB in that moment functioning for them, because that's going to change around for people. You know, why you might pull at one time might be different than why you would pull at another time. And so just having an understanding of the depth and just how multifaceted we as people are. But there are certainly societal stigmas. There are different cultural stigmas. I would say, like, you know, with sometimes within different religious cultures, sometimes within different ethnic cultures, we aren't going to be having mental health problems. We aren't going to go tell people, if you have a problem, let me know and we'll solve it. And there is a sense of pride for person and for even family sometimes of wanting to be like, you know what, I'm okay. Everything's good. We're good. On the surface, we're good, right? And so being able to draw in those brows or being able to have concealing clothing that can cover up or hide different things. Also, it's very common, not just within the BFRB community, but for anybody. Like if there's something that you feel vulnerable about, are you going to go out and be like, hey, neighbor, look at this thing. I'm kind of weird. I'm feeling weird about it. Like, no, you're likely to try and cover up, try to hide because you don't want to feel exposed. That's uncomfortable. That's so vulnerable. And many of us are going to operate out of, I don't want to feel rejected by other people. And so operating out of that framework can be so impactful. So you found out there's this mental health condition. You doubled down of like, nope. And so what was that like when you were dating and when you got married? Did that become tricky for you? Because I know in the TED Talk, you talk about how you did conceal it initially from your husband. What was that like for you?
Yeah, I concealed it all through my dating years. And it wasn't, I don't know, like, no offense to the guys listening, but I just really feel like guys don't pay enough attention to notice a little bit, you know, like. So sorry. But yeah, I mean, I think with guys, it wasn't, you know, I was still worried about it, but it didn't stop me from trying to find a partner in life and going on dates and things like that. And so I finally did meet Samir, who's my husband, in 2006-ish. And we started dating. And in 2010, we got married. And in 2011, we moved to Minneapolis. And in 2013, I was pregnant with my first child and I was pulling like just nonstop. So, you know, you think from teen years till around these early late 20s, I figured out kind of how to hide it with the black eye pencil and also how to kind of maintain it in a way that was like a little bit here, a little bit there, like, oh, okay, I pulled out too much there, I won't touch it, like, you know, like somehow. And it wasn't like a conscious thought process, it was just how my brain was like, okay, I'm scared of being caught, so I'm gonna do this in a way subconsciously that is gonna ensure that I don't get caught. Like, even to the point where I would pencil on my eyebrows and my girlfriends would be like, oh, I love your eyebrows. I'm like, I drew these on, but thank you. And with my husband during pregnancy, I was working late at night and that was pulling a lot and went to sleep, woke up in the morning, rolled over, and I had pulled out both eyebrows. This was the first time that I'd ever done that. Like, I was just so very stressed. and I saw the reflection in the mirror. I jumped out of bed, ran to the bathroom to get my black eyed pencil, and he was coming out of the bathroom after getting ready, and like kind of bumped into him. And he looked down at me and he was just like, "Anila, where are your eyebrows?" Like, why? Why does it have to happen right now?
You're like, it's already been a stressful 24
yeah.
hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just this like happenstance chance moment. You know, if we were still in New York, we would have been two ships at sea at night, like, because our work schedules were so different. But moving to Minneapolis, the value system is so different and lovely here that we had, like, you know, actual decent work hours
together.
Yeah, time together. And so he noticed, and I was a deer in headlights, couldn't think of a lie fast enough. So I just told him, I pull out my hair. Like, I did it. It was the first time that I ever acknowledged it, right? And told him what it was, because of course I knew the word trichotillomania, and I had in fits and spurts gone to these websites to find information, but always, okay, not now. And then he took to the internet to try to understand what I was going through, and read stories about people and the shame. He understood, okay, like, he got it, you know? And he found a treatment professional in Burnsville, which is just 20 minutes south of Minneapolis, that treated BFRBs, and so encouraged me to go to her. And I did that, and that was super helpful to start understanding this condition. And then one day we're watching TV, I'm pulling without realizing it, and he gently grabbed my hand, and that was this aha moment of, oh, I wish I just had something that notified me. And that was the journey that totally kickstarted our work at Habit Aware.
I love that. So we're going to dive into what Habit Aware is and this amazing discovery and journey like you were talking about. But I wonder if I can ask real quickly, what was it like letting him know, letting him in? I'm sure it was really scary and vulnerable, but did you find like relief of like, I'm finally not alone in this? Or can you describe what that process was like?
Yeah, yeah. I think for myself and probably for a lot of other people, you know, it is that fear of judgment. And you said it earlier, fear of rejection. Mm-hmm. That fear of, oh, you do that. Like, you know, you'll hear, oh, you do that. That's gross. I don't want to be with you is the next thing you think, right? And so he met me with love and compassion. And that was just never a thought. He just wanted to understand. For him, it was like, why didn't you tell me, right? Like, that was the biggest thing. Not why are you doing this weird thing, but why didn't you tell me? Like, I'm supposed to be here for you, right? And so that's exactly that, like, now I wasn't alone. Now I had support. Now I had, you know, him grabbing my hand, which frankly is quite annoying. Like, don't do that. Right. But at least I had support. I had other eyes on me kind of thing, right? Yeah. I had connection. And I think that is the biggest thing that we with BFRBs, we are so afraid, and rightfully so, because if we tell the wrong person, it could backfire. And so I've even heard treatment professionals like recommend, tell someone that you know will support you, right? Like, you don't go telling your whole basketball team, you go tell like your best friend, your mom, or you do it in a way that you are making sure you're setting yourself up for a safe environment. And in that moment, though it was this caught feeling, it was, he caught me without eyebrows, but then he also caught me.
Oh, I love that.
That sense, right? Of like, I got you. Like, we're going to do this together. And then we've been doing it together ever since.
That gave me chills, fam. Did it give you chills? Yes, he did. He caught you. It's so freeing when you realize this thing that I was afraid of, and so many things, particularly when we're talking about our mental health, in isolation, in the dark there, grow, right? They grow in intensity, they grow in shame, they grow in pain. And so having somebody that can be like, it must have felt a little bit surreal almost to have him be like, why don't you tell me, I'm here for you? Because your whole life you've been like, I have to hide it. No one can know. And it's just such a powerful testimony. But yes, it will annoy a lot of people if you grab their hands. We're not shading your hubby, but this is part of where the genius of Habit Aware comes in. So we'd love for you to share with the fam here about what is Habit Aware and how did you guys greenlit this, how it came to be. So yeah, share with people because this is really cool.
Yeah. So that moment on the couch, that aha moment, like, you know, he grabbed my hand and I looked at him and I said, I wish I had something that notified me that wasn't you. You know, I don't want you to do it.
Right.
But I literally like wrapped my fingers around my wrist. So I was like a smart bracelet, right? The Fitbits were out at that time. Apple Watch was not out yet, but there was this idea of like wearable technology. And so, you know, again, he took to the internet, couldn't find anything that already existed. And so we were like, all right, what if we try to build it? And we're technologists, but not developers, not hardware people, not software people. So in the Minneapolis community, it's got a huge startup scene. And so I just was going, I had already, when we moved here, I also switched to advertising by that point and was doing digital production. So I was managing website builds, managing like a lot of this stuff anyway. So I understood like technology in that sense and
yeah,
was going to a lot of startup events to understand mobile app development and things like that. So I was making friends in the community through my advertising work already. And then I just took this idea to some of those folks and I was like, hey, I had to share my business idea secret and my trichotillomania secret to explain to folks why we needed help. And people in the community were just like, oh, I can't help you, but check over here at this organization, check at this event. And slowly we met John Pritchard, who is our co-founder and lead hardware engineer, and Kirk Kobe, who is our chief technology officer and firmware and software engineer. And the four of us became founders in HabitAware. And really, the two of them, I did the app design. And the four of us built a smart bracelet that you train it for the behavior that you do, and it sends a vibration to bring you into awareness. So whether you're picking at your face or, you know, that scanning motion of like I have a pimple right here right now that I'm rubbing, right? So that, or maybe that active nail biting. For me, it was rubbing my eyebrows or running your fingers through your hair. Whatever it is that you do when you're engaging in a BFRB, it can alert you to it. And now, coming soon, will be instead of having to train the device, we've taken these years of kind of movement data and now it'll just be at a push of a button. I want to be alerted to eyebrows. I want to be alerted to like the back of my head. I want to be alerted to my face. So to reduce the steps it takes for someone to start this journey.
Yeah.
And it's rooted in that first step of habit reversal training, even the Combi model, which is another BFRB treatment, cognitive behavioral therapy as well. Awareness. You cannot change what you don't know is happening. And so the bracelet is bringing you into awareness. And even folks that say, oh, I know when I'm pulling, I know when I'm picking, it is still rooted in the subconscious. And so that vibration is shifting it to the conscious so that now you are in conscious control. So you have the awareness plus control where you can shift the conversation from, oh, I got to just get that one. Oh, no, wait, I missed it. I got to get that one. Oh, I got to get that one now. I got to get that one now. I got to get that one now.
Right.
That vibration goes, wait, Anila, your hands are not where you want them to be. What do you need? What is the function? Why are you engaging right now? Allows you to pause, allows you to ask those Combi scamp questions of what am I doing? What am I feeling? Where am I? What do I need?
Yeah.
And then makes it a choice where I can say, you know what? I still want to pull. Or I can say, okay, it's 10:30 at night. I'm tired. I need to go to sleep and take care of yourself. So that's the rhythm and the method that we are trying to impart on our keen families, what we call them, because the device is called keen because it brings you keen awareness. And so we have a family too. And we hope that whoever's listening and this resonates, come join our family, stay in the OCD family podcast, but
yeah,
come join our family too.
We can have a family reunion hangout fam. I think that sounds really good. Yeah. You know, what I love about it, and first of all, I just have to say, like, fam, if you're like, she went out and made a smart bracelet so that it can vibrate, not her husband's hand on her. Isn't that amazing? Because it's so cool, the idea. But then to go, oh, yeah, that doesn't exist. I wish it did. And that you were able to go, not only I wish it did, but okay, let's do it. I guess it doesn't exist. I guess that doesn't mean it's a no. It means it doesn't exist yet. Let's create it. And at the time, because you were talking about when your husband first discovered you without the eyebrows, you were pregnant. And it sounds like from the TEDx, and you tell me, but it sounds like you had a newborn at the time. Is that right?
Around that time when we just started, we had a newborn. So that was around 2013, 2014. He was like a year old. So we were kind of doing this in like fits and spurts, nights and weekends, still working. In 2016, like basically I was using prototypes to test the hypothesis, right? Is this going to work? Does awareness, does that vibration help me change behavior? Then we got to a point where we had 3D printed prototypes that when I was going around looking for founders, I would tell people my story and they'd be like, oh, look at me, I bite my nails or I pull from my head. And so I was quietly making a list of alpha testers.
Yeah.
And they kind of gave us feedback. We tried to improve it again. And then in 2016, we got into HAX, which is a hardware accelerator program based in Shenzhen, China. And then at that point, my older son was 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And so we found an English-speaking daycare. We went to HAX for 5 months, and we would drop him off in the morning, and we would go to the HAX offices, and we would work on the app design, the marketing, the actual hardware development, being in, you know, I mean, this is the place where your Apple products, all the electronics are getting built here.
Right.
In Japan. So we were in the heart of that manufacturing capital. And it just like those 5 months was like twice as much as we had done in the 2 years that we were trying to kind of,
yeah,
you know, get this thing going and figure it out and find the right people. And it just, the doors just kept opening. And frankly, I had always wanted to start a business. Like as a child, I used to play office, seeing my mom run her dental office, my dad run his own import-export business. Like I had always wanted to start a business. And that was also part of the reason that I was attending startup events. And but I had also as a child wanted to do good in the world. And so this was just like the doors opening, like that marriage of those two desires that I had coming to fruition. And to be able to do this with Samir is just a testament to our parents, both of our parents, showing us how to work together, that both of them worked together in their own businesses as well. And so we learned it, you know. For us, it was just like people will always be like, you work with your husband, that's great, like how do you do that? And I'm just like,
they're like you work together and no one's killed each other. What? Wow. Yeah. I mean, it is amazing, because for any other parents listening, we just know how busy those early years are. And to, you know, to uproot and go across the world for 5 months plus with a young child trying to figure this out is so amazing. And yet I bet for you, you were like, yeah, no, I gotta do this. We're gonna do this. We're gonna do it right. And so there was that commitment. But it's incredible, because I mean, how many people would be so brave to take on moving to another country for a period of time with a young kiddo, all of that? And you guys were determined, and it has not only benefited you and your testers that you were quietly learning about, but the broader community. And so it's really, really cool, because this is a bracelet, the Keen bracelet. And I think I saw, because I was looking at it with a client, that now there is maybe an Apple Watch integration.
Yes. Yeah. I have an Apple Watch app. So Apple Watch is a closed system, so we can't get access to the sensors completely. It's in 1 hour increments. So the Keen 2 bracelet is sort of always on awareness building. And then the Apple Watch is kind of these 1 hour training sessions. And it's a good way to sort of test out the device. And then, you know, if you want, you can keep going with the 1 hour training sessions or buy a Keen 2, or some people do need two. You know, so you could do your Apple Watch on one side and a Keen 2 on the other. Like I use two devices throughout this whole process to build awareness of my hands. And really what you're doing is you're not just building awareness of your hands, but you're building that mind-body connection of my hands are talking to me. My hands are trying to tell me something.
Yeah.
And what is it trying to tell me? And when I can say, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I need this. I can take care of myself.
That's amazing. And I love, so since I've been talking with Anila, somehow Google knows what you're interested in and it will show me the different ads. But I love even the ads that talk about and reframe the bracelet, the vibrations, as not just, oh gosh, how do I stop? But, oh gosh, how do I give myself some love in this moment? And I think that's a really beautiful way of understanding how our body is trying to speak to us. So I really appreciated that. But it's really cool. What I will say is, particularly for my neurodivergent clients that I work with, one of the tricky things we run up against, and this isn't exclusive to neurodivergent processors, but it certainly does come up within these populations, that tracking behavior, tracking awareness, tracking episodes, picking episodes or pulling episodes is really, really hard. And sometimes that's just going to add to the distress when it's like, gosh, I really want to work on this and I was supposed to track and I didn't. And now that distress is making me want to self-regulate even more. And it can sometimes be this vicious cycle. And so tracking gets to be really hard. What's really nice about the Keen bracelet, and I have a client that has one, so I've been like, oh, show me all the fun stuff. This is so fun.
Cool.
But it's really cool because it naturally tracks and it can like collate these reports. One thing too, I think is so helpful, because if you're doing like a skin picking log, which there are great resources out there, and so I'm not knocking on a skin picking log at all, but sitting there and going, okay, what was I thinking and what was I feeling and what time of day it was? I had a client share that, you know, it would bring up kind of this multiple choice. What was going on in this moment for you? And because this was created by you, where you have insight and understanding of those kind of things, the kind of questions even to ask, then having it as simple as almost like a push button notification where you can just respond and you don't have to sit and log it out, which again, depending on how busy we are, or if we didn't get it, or if we already just are going to have trouble focusing, getting through some of these tracking logs is like monotonous amount of work to try and like, oh, I need to remember to do this. It's such a helpful way to just naturally have that data available. And then it's also there with you, because it's like we work in the therapy room for an hour. There's 167 other hours in the week where a lot of the therapy is happening. And so many people are, I do wish, but I don't want my family member to be the one, because I feel shame. I feel frustrated. I feel annoyed when they're like, hey, you're picking again, or whatever the situation is. And so having a tool that can help bring awareness is so, so helpful. And I love that part of the design. It sounds really cool too, that taking all the data that you guys have gathered thus far, even being able to go like, I won't necessarily have to train in the future here the device as much as I can say add eyebrows. Because sometimes, as with many things, like an OCD, themes can shift,
right?
Yeah. So BFRBs, I see this. I was telling Anila before, my daughter has a BFRB and there's kind of a more preferred BFRB. But other times she'll engage in a different form of a BFRB. And so being able to have something where you could just kind of tap in and go, okay, this is the thing that's kind of happening for me today, not having to retrain the bracelet, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's the idea, that burden of hand tracking of, okay, this time, et cetera. At least the bracelet automatically, when it vibrates, it'll track that timestamp, right? So you can start seeing some trends just on like looking at the day. That's actually how I figured out, oh, it's late at night. Like, it would just spike, right? And then now I can't stay awake past 11 o'clock because I've trained myself to go to sleep. Like, I used to be up till 2, 3 in the morning, work. And now I just don't. Now I just go to bed. And so the eyebrows are there in the morning, and so is the work, and that's okay. But the app also does have the ability to input some of that other contextual information, like how are you feeling, your mood, where you are, your activities, because again, it's about that mind-body connection and it's about understanding the context, right? You know, is it 10:30 at night and you're tired, but you're still staying up to watch whatever the latest Netflix hit is that is causing you anxiety because all these shows now do, right?
Right.
Right. They're like these dramas that are just so intense. Like, you got to turn it off. Like, that's what it means. It means go to bed. It means stop feeding your brain the stuff that's making you more anxious. Go to bed. You're tired. Go to bed. So understanding the context is going to help you figure out what is the right self-regulation tool for me for this moment. And it's not to do that on your own. The whole point is to then take that information and work with a treatment professional so that you can ideate and experiment and come up with the right strategies for those moments. Maybe you can do it on your own. Maybe you can do it with us in the online community that we run. But hopefully you're also speaking with a treatment professional, because it just, they go hand in hand. Like, there's so much going on in our brains and our lives and the day that we need that outlet. Like, everybody should have a therapist, you know, someone to talk to, someone to go to. Even my treatment professional a few months ago, you know, she's like, you know, I think we're done here. I think we're pretty good. And the biggest thing I learned from my BFRB is you do not stop what's working. You keep doing what's working. And so I told her, no, you're not getting rid of me. We can go 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is, but I still want to calendar with you, because I still want to schedule with you, because I need this outlet. I need this conversation. This conversation is what keeps me away from you.
Yeah, I want to not need you.
I want to not need you.
Yes. Yeah.
But I also want to connect with you, because it sustains the work.
It sustains you.
Yeah. Exactly. It's about taking control. It's about managing. It's about building that life that eventually you get to the point where you can, your hands don't go anywhere anymore, because you've done the work to build your life in a way that you are taking care of yourself before you need to.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I think that, again, just kind of circling back to the beauty, though I wouldn't wish it on anybody through any distressing experience, but that's part of the beauty in being able to have the treatment and have that hope and that resilience and that empowerment. Can I ask you, what advice would you have for somebody that may be able to really, I know we've come a long way in that stigma of mental health, like we described before, but there still is a vulnerability and a difficulty sometimes for people bridging that gap of realizing maybe I am struggling with my mental health in some way. What advice would you have in terms of helping someone get the courage to reach out to a treatment provider and share about what they're experiencing and the help that they're seeking? Because I think I absolutely agree. And of course, I'm a treatment provider. So yeah, I'm going to say it. But also, again, sometimes I'm sure so many people listening are like, I get that, Anila. Like, I know this can't be what this is. And how to kind of let go of some of that fear to be able to reach out to someone. Would you have any tips or advice?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really about finding a treatment professional. Yeah, I the way I describe finding a treatment professional is it is like dating. Like, you need to go in, you need to see if you jive, you need to see if you feel comfortable with that person. It's an interview. That first session is an interview for you as with the condition, as it is for the treatment professional, to make sure, right, that like this is going to work. I would also do research to make sure that whatever condition it is that you are looking for help with, that that person has expertise in. So back in my 20s, after I kind of found out it was trichotillomania, some other stuff was going on in my life that is in my memoir and too much for right now. But essentially, I went to a treatment professional and I told them I have hair pulling. It was also around my dad and grief and loss. And so, you know, I went in there with, she knew about my dad. And so that was what she wanted to kind of talk about. And so I said, I pull out my, like, you know, when they ask anything else you want to share, I said that I pull out my hair and I have this thing. And she didn't know what it was, and I don't fault her, because, again, it was the early 2000s. Nobody knew what these things were. But her response was, oh, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about your dad. And so that was not helpful to me, and I didn't go back to her because I didn't feel seen.
Right.
So you want to go to a treatment professional that at least has heard of these conditions, has hopefully done some training, And so that first step would be emailing them and say, hey, you're in my neighborhood, you're in my network. Do you have experience with these behaviors? Because then you don't have to do anything else if they say, no, I do not, right? Then you
right.
go to the next person.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing. If you're seeking a treatment professional, make sure they have what you need in terms of the education. And that's it. That's an email, right? You don't have to go in and bare all before they say, oh, I've never heard of that, or oh, that's gross, because sometimes they don't have the knowledge yet. And that's part of the work I do at the nonprofit I started 3 years ago, is to do CE trainings, continuing education trainings, so that more treatment professionals will know about these conditions. Because I don't want anyone to have that experience, but I know that people have had that experience in the past.
Yeah. Well, in connecting with other people in the community that have BFRBs too can help empower you regarding how you can advocate for yourself. I love what you're saying there, and I think you absolutely can do that. And I think sometimes people do say, yeah, I treat this, and they don't understand it. And so that can build in some fear of like, okay, what's going to happen? But like you said, you know, it's so important to have somebody that's going to listen to you. And I absolutely agree. This is as much of a you trying them out as them kind of trying you out. You deserve somebody that is going to hear you and that is going to validate what your goals are, not superimpose their own goals or decide from hearing a snippet of your life that, oh, this is what we're going to do, right?
Yeah.
And so having somebody that you can work with, not somebody that is working on you, but working with you, is so important. And Anila mentioned that you can read about that in the memoir. She does have a memoir that's going to come out next year. And you might go, Anila, how do you have the time? But on top of that, she just referenced also, she has founded a nonprofit called the BFRB Changemakers. Amazing. Anila, when she first reached out to me, I was like, Anila is behind all of this? That's amazing, Anila. So tell us more about BFRBChangemakers.org, because this is an amazing, amazing organization and a great resource for the BFRB community.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's still a baby nonprofit, still trying to figure out exactly what it is, but started it in 2023. Just the community was kind of looking for some support at that time. And we started with a little reunion event later that year. Mm-hmm. And then really want a center lived experience and serve the community through online support. So we run support groups, we run an online community through CE trainings to really improve access and quality of care. So those CE trainings are to help new professionals as well as seasoned professionals get the shifting landscape of treatment as well, of like recognizing this is self-regulation. This is not just a physical behavior that we're trying to stop, but this is a self-regulation behavior that we're trying to help people learn to manage, learn to take control of, learn to make small in their life. And so the treatments are shifting, right? It's COMBI, it's SCAMP. Then there's also these integrative approaches of that mind-body connection that also need to happen for long-term lasting care. So we're trying to focus on getting those CE trainings out there to folks with experts in the field like Dr. Deibler and Dr. Renardi, who have been on your show, and probably others. And then our third pillar is to increase awareness and reduce shame. And so working with research clinicians, clinician researchers on access to participants through Habit Aware, through change makers, through the online support groups, the Facebook groups, to help ensure that researchers are studying things that matter to the people with lived experience. Like we have that anecdotal evidence of what are the questions that people are asking? Is it genetic? What's the link with ADHD? What's this? What's that? Right? Fame, gender. There's still so much we don't know.
Right.
You know?
Right.
About these conditions and the science behind them. And so research, supporting research in that way that helps increase awareness of those conditions, but then also increases understanding, which reduces shame. So those are the things that we do through Changemakers, and then through Habit Aware, we help build physical awareness of the behavior and then help people go through and teach this process of using awareness to learn how to choose healthier replacement strategies, and also the mindset shifts to be more self-loving to oneself so that when we slip, we don't get mad. We dust ourselves off, pick ourselves up, and keep going. And so through our online community, we do that work as well as we do some peer coaching.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love that because, you know, we've talked about BFRBs a number of times, and there isn't a cure. It's your brain braining, right? There's not a cure. That doesn't mean there isn't incredible hope available, but it's going to be a part of your neurocircuitry. And like you said earlier, sometimes you get to be faced with a choice, particularly once your awareness is involved. Is it worth it? Do I want to pull this? Or am I going to just go to sleep? Because you're right, my body is screaming at me, go to bed, girlfriend. And I'm just tired, right? And so sometimes you're going to make the choice to engage in your BFRB, and sometimes you're not. And so having that self-compassion and allowing yourself to be human and honor the strengths and the challenges that we all have and be able to give some of that self-love back to yourself, I think is so special and so important. And it's really one of those disruptors to shame to go, oh, actually, my body was just like, girlfriend, you have a need right now. And that's very different than being like, I messed up again and I'm the worst. And, you know, all that negative self-talk that we can so quickly say to ourselves.
And that negative self-talk then feeds the behavior, right? That cycle, you know? And so if we stop the cycle of negative self-talk and shift to love, we also can stop the cycle of the pulling, of the picking, of the nail biting as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, any one of these things, had you just done BFRB Changemakers, had you just done the Keen Aware, had you just done the TED Talk, we go, or the memoir for that sake, we would have been like, I am so impressed, because you can only imagine, family, how much work and effort it takes to put into that. But in addition to that, that you did all of it and that you're continuing to be curious and open to where this journey is taking you, and that you have invited everyone in with you to benefit from the resources that you've learned and help empower people to learn more, is just fantastic, Anila. And so I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart and on behalf of the fam here for coming and sharing with us today. I'm going to have links to Habit Aware and about the Keen bracelet, or you can check out, again, the Apple Watch. I want to say it's even available like in a monthly or maybe a yearly subscription, which I thought was cool, because if you want to like test it out, and there's a free trial on that as well.
Yep.
That's a really cool way to kind of see, could this be a really helpful tool for me and help me understand my behaviors better, my different habits around this? And I'm going to put the links to BFRB Changemakers. Is there anything else you would like to share with the fam before we wrap up today?
Probably. There's so much. There's still so much we're working on. We have an NIH Phase 2 research grant that we're putting into. It will be a 90-person randomized controlled trial for trichotillomania to help people with the condition with the bracelet, and then the app actually using some of that information, mood, activity, time, to start helping people do that work of figuring out what are the right strategies for you. So taking them through that process of what's called habit reversal training. So it's awareness building, then replacement behavior training, and then the support training, which you mentioned, community as being paramount to the healing process, like 1,000% to that. The change we see happening in our online community is because of the support that everybody gets and gives, and the mindset shifts, right? We have to remember this is a mental health condition. A lot of us are like, it's a hand condition, but it's a mental health condition. And when we change our thoughts, we gain power over our hands. And that is like the work that we need to do. And that's sort of also where, when we were talking about toxic positivity earlier, positivity can't be toxic. Positivity is the work to help us get control over this stuff. And so there's so much going on, and I appreciate you recognizing all the things that we're doing. It's been a beautiful journey. It's not just me. We have a team of 10 people, so we're still a small company, but the 10 of us have been working hard to serve the BFRB community for almost 10 years now, 8 years in market with the bracelet. And really, like, the part that I've said I alluded to in the memoir.
I was in such a deep depression, I should not be here today. I was not going to be here today during that time. And so for me, it is just a blessing to be able to take this pain and recognize that other people have been going through this pain as well and find a way to climb out of it and to be able to help others do that same thing. And so we're really, really forget trying to impress people. We just are super blessed to be able to do this work and to support the community that, aside from the treatment professionals that know these behaviors, have been largely ignored by the medical healthcare system, yeah. Right? And so, like, we can't do it without the community. We need their support. We need their love. We need their openness to come work with us, come do this work, and to go to treatment professionals to get better as well, because there is so much possibility in that. And yeah. We've seen it. Not just me, but, like, we've seen it. Thousands and thousands of people. So if you're listening, if you're in that rut right now and thinking this cannot get better, and it might not even be a BFRB, it might be another problem. Mm-hmm. It's the same formula. Go find the experts that can help you and the tools that can help you and go into it with hope. And it will come.
I love that. And yeah. It is such a powerful gift, Anila, that you've been able to take the immense pain and create so much hope that the ripple effects, I don't think you'll ever know the ripple effects of it, but it is so powerful. And so thank you for what you do. And if people want to reach out, what would be the best way for people to follow up with you?
Absolutely. My email address is anila@habitaware.com. You can find me on Instagram at Anila Adnani. It's me in the messages, so you can DM me there. You can find me at HabitAware on Instagram, at BFRB Changemakers on Instagram. But yeah, I a testament to the Minneapolis startup community, Fortune 500 CEOs have been accessible to us in building this company, and I want to be accessible to anyone who's in need in that same way. So just reach out.
That's beautiful. So we'll have all that contact information over on this episode's blog. And wow, just super grateful for you, Anila. Thank you for taking the time. Thanks for hanging with the fam. And Let's keep in touch, because I'm in awe of what an impact and difference you're making. And I would love to stay connected.
Thank you for this opportunity to share our story with your fam. You know, my fam.
Our fam.
Absolutely.
Intrusive thoughts. All right, family. So, what do you think? Anila is amazing. Am I right? I mean, I am so excited and inspired and tired just hearing all the things she's done, because I'm like, you have been busy. So, Anila, again, thank you. Thank you, thank you for some of your very precious time to hang out with the fam. So that brings us to the intrusive thought segment, which for any newer fam joining us is my application segment of the show. It's that time where we try to distill some of the concepts or new things we learned about and apply it today, here, now. And so Anila has made my job super easy this week, because Anila has been all about providing resources and support. And so first, I'm going to re-highlight the Keen bracelet, because, again, it's the coolest invention ever and so able to target BFRBs specifically. And it's just the innovation, the determination, the expansion of this hard work. Amazing. So you can check out more information about the Keen bracelet over at habitaware.com. But also, I just have to note, in the time since Anila and I recorded, the Keen bracelet has caught some more attention, shall we say, of a certain celebrity and comedian, Mr. Howie Mandel. And I was like, holy cow, I'm so thrilled for Anila. And I'm really thrilled, even more so, for the BFRB community. Because with Howie's endorsement, I know that this information and this resource is going to reach even more people. So if you haven't caught the ad, I want you to take a listen. But also, you can find this probably around Instagram. If you're listening to this, Google's probably like, you care about the Keen bracelets. You might even get it served organically. But let's take a listen.
Howie Mandel here. Have you ever caught yourself doing something without even realizing it? Maybe you're biting your nails, picking at your skin, or pulling out your hair while watching TV, or You're just lost in thought. You're not alone. And Habit Aware is here to help. Habit Aware's King 2 smart bracelet has sensors that can detect your specific movements. It also comes with an app to track your progress and a video course to support you along the way. Get 15% off with code Howie15 at habitaware.com/Howie.
Okay, so I'm going to have Howie's link over on this episode's blog at OCDFamilyPodcast.com. And as I mentioned throughout the episode, we're also going to have links to BFRB Changemakers. We're going to have a link to Anila's TED Talk. All the things, y'all. Additionally, beyond the bracelet, another way that we can help raise awareness is by helping Anila in raising her visibility. So there are a number of really easy, really practical, free, and quick little actions you can take that will make all the difference. And that includes going to the Instagram accounts of Habit Aware or BFRB Changemakers, or even here with the fam, like and follow, interact, leave a comment for Anila. Again, she is behind the DMs and she is inviting you to connect and engage. But even if you're leaving a comment, sharing makes a huge difference for the algorithm. And it's free and it takes a second, okay? Also, there's a reel for this episode and you could share the reel about it. Say, come listen to the episode. That can guide you to watching Anila's TED Talk. Like the TED Talk. Share the TED Talk. All of these things, again, make a difference in increasing visibility. Because whether it's triggering the algorithm or just helping maybe a friend or a family member that you have in your life and letting them know there's hope, there's support, there's help, there's resources, there's tools, like literal tools, like a smart bracelet tool, that makes a difference. As I recall it, 1 in 20 people have a BFRB. And you might have been like, oh my gosh, after listening to this, I'm realizing I have a BFRB and I just didn't know it went by that name. You're not alone if that's you, but you're also not alone if you felt hopeless, if you felt shame, if you felt despair, distress, embarrassment, depression, any of it. And so chances are you know someone, even if you don't directly deal with it, that does. And I thank you for taking this time to learn more about BFRBs. It matters. And there's hope. So do Anila a favor, like an account, like a post, leave a comment, subscribe. Share and be part of the change because you too can be a change maker. You can join in helping bring awareness so that more folks, Anila, your loved one, you can know that you're not alone. Thank you for joining me and our OCD family community. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please like and subscribe to the OCD Family Podcast wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Did you find this content helpful? Please consider leaving a review. The more people that know they're not alone, the better. For more information regarding today's podcast, please visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com and remember to join the email list while you're there. It will provide you with the most up-to-date information, resources, and the download on the family chatter. Oh yeah, nothing says family like Anila and me talking all about BFRBs. That's right, I went there. And you can too at OCDFamilyPodcast.com.
Are your clients struggling with disgust-based contamination OCD? Have you tried upgrading your ERP with the Mastery approach? Visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses and click on my link because I've got just the training for you. At OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses, you can check out OCD Training School's entire catalog of courses, including Rich Gallagher's course, Treating Contamination OCD. Where else can you build mastery over disgust-based triggers while supporting the fam at no extra cost to you? It's a win-win at OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses.